You're listening to The Comedy Cellar, live from the table on the Riotcast Network, riotcast.com.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to The Comedy Cellar Show here on Sirius XM Channel 99, The Comedy Channel. We're here, of course, with Mr. Dan Natterman. My name is Noam Dworman. I'm the owner of The Comedy Cellar. We're sitting at the back table of The Comedy Cellar. We have one of our regular comedians here. Mr. DC Benny is here with us.
Thank you for having me, Noam. Thank you for having me.
Thanks, DC. And the guest of honor, Dan, you want to do the honors for the guest of honor?
Well, we have with us, Noam, somebody that used to work here many years ago, back in the 80s. And then he moved to L.A. and found fame and fortune in the City of Angels, Mr. Fred Stoller.
Well, I'm going to do my Dan Natterman-ish. I always dispute people when they go, "You're really famous." No, you know. I know you're a great guy. I only met you a few times, but you seem to do what I do. Like,
well, I'm just trying to give you a big intro.
But I appreciate it. No, you're a great guy. No, I'm just...
I used to watch Fred when I was in college in the 80s on, like, Letterman or whatever he was on, those shows.
I was going to say thank you, but one time someone said, "I recognize you." I said, "Thanks." They said, "I didn't say it was good."
So, right. Let me finish.
Yes. That is true. A lot of people do tell you, "Hey, well, I saw you," and you don't know how to respond.
Exactly.
To that. But I did think you were. We all liked you.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate you. By the way, oftentimes, Fred, now, have you done the show before, haven't you?
Yeah, one time.
I did. I was traumatized.
We'll get to oftentimes we discuss.
I'm not even saying that.
Yeah, go ahead.
What happened was, it sounds like a bit, and I really don't do stand-up anymore. I came back for a year to open for Norm Macdonald, and now I'm really not going to do it anymore. If you know, have you hung out with Norm?
No, but I've heard stories.
Yeah, I think, you know who's a good guy? Noam Macdonald. Get it? No, this would almost be a bit.
Fred Stoller is trashing me there, you know?
No, Noam, meaning, you know, instead of Norm, I'm not trashing you.
No, I'm saying I'm doing my Norm Macdonald impression.
Oh, so I'm here, and I don't want to seem rude because I see... I don't care if I say the name, Nick DiPaolo, and at this table, and I actually hung out with Nick a long time because we were up for the first Louis show, not Lucky Louis.
On HBO, right?
Yes, and he was very nice, saying, "Hey, my wife's a big fan," and so I didn't want to be rude. I see him, so I go over and go, "Hey," and they would ignore me. They weren't looking at me. I go, "Hey, we hung out with Louis C.K. We're auditioning." And then I sleeked back, and I didn't know you're not supposed to approach the illustrious Comedy Cellar table.
You can approach the... You're a comedian.
Well, they treated me...
You're Fred Stoller. Who?
I didn't,
DiPaolo?
Was Nick DiPaolo.
He's always so nice.
It could be. Sometimes that's how they interact. They play the dozens, if you will. They insult each other as part of... Their friendship ritual.
If you're walking in the middle of that.
No one came over and said, "Just joking." Yeah. You know, Fred Stoller's not part of this ever. No, I have no grudges. It was not really traumatized. Maybe I'm using a comedic term, but I'm careful this time.
He actually is one of the nicest guys.
Oh, Nick DiPaolo?
He's...
Well, we can't... I don't know what happened on that day. He was in a bad mood for some reason.
No, but Noam was very, very nice. He even said, if you wanted to do a spot, and I didn't, but that was so generous, and I was so thank you. No. And I'm not even saying this to say this. This is the best meal I've had.
My weekend
in New York. I'm staying on 23rd and 9th. I'm a creature of habit, comfort, where I'll just go to the same diner over and over.
Me too.
And I'll go to the same Chinese restaurant.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Same thing.
When you're on
thing.
The road, you just find
you
one
identify
place.
The ones. You identify the ones, and then you don't deviate from that.
Exactly, because you'll take a risk.
Why get disappointed or dysentery?
Yes. So this has been the best meal. I've been here since late Saturday.
Speaking of meals, I just want to very quickly mention something before moving on to Fred's new Kindle single. The news at the Comedy Cellar,
there's a special prosecutor. Go ahead.
I say we, but it has nothing to do with me. But there is a new show. Now, just when you think they couldn't add more shows at the Comedy Cellar, they added a Sunday brunch show. So Sunday at 1:30 p.m., I believe it is, they'll be serving brunch and a comedy.
Very nice.
And it's already sold out.
Is it gospel? Will people be singing? Or just, you know?
No.
Yeah, okay. just
it's going to be comedians. Judah Friedlander is doing it. A bunch of other people. We have a big kitchen. Now, I figured we should try it.
There's always that balance, that delicate balance that has to be struck between increasing revenue and decoolifying the comedy cellar.
Yeah, comedy during the day, that's rolling the dice a little bit. That's rolling the dice, you know, but very...
Hold on. First of all, that's fine. You don't need to call in. I didn't say I didn't want to do it.
I didn't say I didn't want to do it. I'm saying, you know, one has to... There's something to be said for a comedy cellar turning people away, hard to get into.
Yes.
When you keep adding shows, you increase revenue, but at some point it becomes less cool.
Ah.
Are you saying we're going to lose our mojo if we have a brunch?
I don't think he's saying that.
I didn't say that. I heard tell.
He heard tell because that the line the was brunch, being towed.
I'll stop the brunch right now.
I didn't even think of that, but I was talking to a comic. I'm not going to name his name, and he did think. He did wonder whether or not that was a slight shark jumping.
Now you got.
We're jumping the shark.
I don't know. We won't know until. Well, I don't know if we're jumping the shark, but I heard Ted. Ted McGinley is hosting that show.
Cypher Sounds is going to DJ.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah.
He has credibility in the community.
Certainly.
And
the brunch community as well. There's a large brunch community.
Well, Cypher did a brunch show. That's what I guess inspired you, right?
No, actually, I had the idea a long time ago.
Uh huh.
And I wanted to name it Hams and Eggs, and everybody got upset with me, which I thought was kind of cute.
I do like that.
Then Gary Goldman said it should be Bagels and Yucks. And then everybody...
Well, both are fine.
You're right.
But it's not. It's just called Comedy Cellar Brunch.
It's going to make
really
$1 million.
Hams and Eggs.
It's going to make $1 million.
Listen, actually not going to make a lot of money, but it's selling out. I think...
If it sells out, it's another decent little... You know,
I think if I were a tourist,
some turkey bacon and waffles and laugh.
People who don't get a chance, nice. Or American or New Yorker, don't get a chance to go to the Comedy Cellar at night, whatever it is.
You're from Wisconsin, you come here.
I don't know. What do you think, Fred? It's a bad idea, a brunch?
Comedy brunch.
What time?
It's 1:30 brunch hour, and we have eggs and, you know, Eggs Benedict and bacon, you know.
As we would say, worst case scenario, it doesn't work out.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I think what Dan is saying is that it will work out, but... I'm going to jump the shark in the process.
I suggest that as a remote possibility, just food for thought, if you will.
Well, you're pushing the envelope.
Think of like seniors, like the
they need to laugh too.
No, and actually, you know, normally I would just let this roll off my back, but when somebody like Dan Natterman says I might not be cool, I really need to take that seriously.
I've either.
Sorry, this is all news to me, this whole brunch thing.
Well, you know, I just threw it out there.
Fred has a new book.
It's a Kindle single.
Well, yeah, and people said it disparagingly.
No, Stephen King did one.
It's all people like Stephen King and Amy Tan and all these. No, it's top people. It's hard to get them.
That's Joy Luck Club, Amy Tan?
Yeah, and all these, what's the guy, James Patterson, all these people do these... about 80 pages, 100 pages, these mini books. So it's hard to get them on.
Well, who's James Patterson? Was he the blind governor of New York?
No, isn't he?
It's thrillers.
I did one called My Seinfeld Year about writing on Seinfeld, My Tumultuous Year.
Was that a Kindle book?
It started as a Kindle. Well, okay. excuse me. The long, amazing story. No, I had this book called Maybe We'll Have You Back, being a perennial TV guest star, because that's what you hope to say, you know, when you're trying to do... I used to be like a foster kid going from TV show to TV show, hoping they keep you on. And you want them to go, maybe we'll have you back. You want a maybe, you know? So I couldn't get that book published. It sat in my computer. You know, I gave up. You know, a confident guy. No, and I didn't want to... I actually did jokes about it because some of these literary agents say, we like it. We wish there was more sex. I said, me too. they wanted a happy ending. That's my life story. No happy ending. Or they wanted gritty, you know, that kind of faux grittiness, like sex rehab or, you know, doing coke, you know, the arty stuff, you know. So then I revisited when, because it was costing me money, because before PDFs, you have to print the stupid thing at Kinko's and double sided, send it to a New York literary agent. So then I would send it around. People go, hey, this is pretty good. Yeah, you should do this. Well, you know, and then someone knew Kindle Singles. I said, what's that? And it did really, really well, because it was, I think, the first behind the scenes writing room Seinfeld stuff. And that led to a book agent and the book, and But then I made much more money from the Kindle single. But I have this other thing that's coming out that's a Kindle single called 5 Minutes to Kill.
What's the subject?
That's
about,
about a year working on King of Queens. Not. See, I'm trying to do a joke. You guys. Well, you remember from a lot of young comedians don't remember how big these HBO Young Comedian specials were.
Oh, yeah, those were huge.
They were launching pads.
Howie Mandel.
DePaulo, right? Did one of those, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. By Sam Kennison, Seinfeld, Saget, Louis Anderson, Roseanne. They got launched. Well, the big ones was when Rodney hosted.
Yeah.
And I always found it interesting.
That a Dangerfield? That was a Dangerfield.
Yeah, they had ones at Dangerfields, but then they had others. The one I did was hosted by Dennis Miller. They had Belzer hosted one. Smothers Brothers hosted one. It was funny. I remember one of the young comedians was Richard Lewis. I go, he's not a young comedian. But then when I did it, I was 31. And people were saying, he's not a young comedian
either. What year is this?
89.
Yeah. And I 31 these days is a very young comedian.
Yeah.
I don't think 31 in 1989 was a young comedian. Comedians are getting older.
Yeah. One of the stories in my thing was... I don't know. Again, I'm out of the comedy loop. But here, if someone has like a Colbert spot, or do you go, hey, can you let Dan on to work on his Conan spot?
Yes,
you know,
yes. If we like them. Yeah.
So I remember the night before at the Improv, they said, could Freddie go on do his HBO Young Comedian special? And the comic I won't name, Freddie Stoller. He's not having a fucking spot. Yeah, he's a young comedian. So then he goes on
stage.
I'll tell you off the thing. Then he goes, I'll tell you off, buy the book. And no, I'm just kidding. So then he goes on stage. He continues to berate me. Yeah, Freddie Stoll, he's a real young, up-and-coming, on the rise. He's a, young, So basically, what I found interesting about the HBO special I was on was the diversity, the trajectory of the paths the six of us took. Like, I was listening to WTF. And Rob Schneider was on, and he said, what was your break? He goes, the HBO Young Comedian Special, 1989. I went, I was on that. Why wasn't my break? What'd I do wrong? I suck, So him and Spade got Saturday Night Live from that Young Comedian Special. I was on it, and two of them, I don't want to give the endings away, read the book, it's $1.99, but if you remember Drake Sather.
No.
Yeah, I remember.
And Warren Thomas. And Jen Karam. Now, you may not have heard of her.
I've heard of her.
I find her interesting because she, and people saying what they like about this book. I'm gonna call it a book. I'm gonna be confident. Is that the more interesting stories are the three people you never heard of. So I follow. So Jen Karam, she was interesting. She still is beautiful. She was before stand-ups. Women like the Amy Schumer, Sarah Silverman, Whitney Cummings, they own their hotness. They're very sexy, and she was very sexy. And I think, before Jen Karam, I don't care if I get in trouble. It's going to be like, I'm not saying they're not attractive, but the Elaine Boozers, the Carol Leifers. No, they're not attractive, but they weren't.
That's not their main thing.
They weren't pinup girls.
Exactly. They weren't owning it,
Rita Rudner would be an example. Rita Rudner had decent features, but not as sexually.
But she actually was like, she acted sexy.
The Carol Leifers,
but I'm not even saying Carol Leifer, these people aren't attractive. I just meant they had the kind of New York kind of, punching
broads.
Out
broads,
yes,
exactly. Yeah, bods and broads.
Yes, so Jen, I think, never got the credit for. She was one of the first kind of breezy, kind of one of her friends was one of the writers on Saturday Night Live, and she kept saying, "Can't you get me on?" And he kept saying, "You're too beautiful." And then finally, she said, "What about Tina Fey?" Finally, Tina Fey stopped that. So she had a lot of trouble because she'd have people. They bought to manage her, but, I want to sleep with you. It's too frustrating. So those were the six people. So I had to be like a detective or a reporter, like family members, club owners, managers. So I really had to do journalism and my own story to track down these stories. And one of my favorite stories I keep repeating was... Now, did you know the Seinfeld episode I wrote about Kenny Banya based on a true story? He's the guy, he gave me an Armani suit and wanted a meal for it.
That's one of the greatest episodes ever.
Do you know a comic named Bruce Smirnoff?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know him.
In real life, he gave me, he goes, I've been working out with weights. I'm huge. I'll give you a suit. You know, you give me a meal. So we met at Jerry's Deli, and he has soup and soda. And it came to $20, and he kept saying, I'm going to save the meal. So I pitched that, and he did it like three times. And Larry goes, Jerry's more assertive than you. He would say right away, this is the meal. So that happened again because one comedian, you know, I would take them out to eat to interview them. And when we went to some place in Malibu, I forget what it's called, Nobo or something.
Uh-huh.
And he said, I'll take it easy. I'll just get appetizers. It was $70. So then he goes, he held back information. He goes, I thought of some more stories. And we meet at another restaurant, and I pick it up again. Then he got a contact with one of the other, he texted someone. Who texted.
So just to be clear, because so the deal is that he owes you a meal. You owe him a meal.
Yes, and Kenny
Banya.
And every
time he buys, he says that's not a meal. That's just a...
yes. That happened in real life, and they based Kenny Banya on a true story. So then, in researching this book, this one guy I was interviewing, he kept holding back information. We'd meet at different restaurants. And then he texted someone who texted someone else, and I got an interview. He goes, now I want a real meal at Nobu's, not just the appetizers. And I was finally assertive, going, you're ridiculous. So it was kind of, but it was kind of fun because I was talking to people like Rick Messina, who, you know, comedy history, but he used to be a bartender at the Eastside Comedy Club. And now,
so many of those guys were bartenders.
Yes,
as
and
managers.
Now he's a gazillionaire. Yeah. He manages Tim Allen, Drew Carey.
Tim Allen just got fired, I heard.
Who?
Tim Allen. The show just got canceled.
Maybe because of the interview.
Because he's a conservative.
Conservative.
Is that true?
I don't know.
I
heard the ratings are good.
The ratings are good. It's hard to imagine what your political philosophy is would matter. But
yeah,
I doubt that. But so yeah, so you know, I like all showbiz stories, so it was kind of fun to go back. And
well, it does sound like an interesting read. This is a
5 Minutes to Kill.
That's what it's called.
Check it out.
You can figure out why it's called
Chronicle,
that.
But you were one of the five. How many people were on the special? Five?
Six. I'm going to buy it right
now. You were one
Please
of
the, do it.
You were one of the six.
Yes.
So let's talk about what's happened to you.
Well,
you say you're not doing stand-up anymore, which is very... How many people get out of stand-up? Most people get out in a body bag.
Yeah.
Well, you know, even I was, you know... well, I'll give you an example. You guys at the Cellar... I give you guys credit because you're a purist where you don't care about pilot season in L.A. You just... And I was here in the comedy...
Well, I'm not a purist, but if I thought that going out for pilot season would significantly advance my career, I would do it. I just don't... I've made that calculation.
You weigh the stage time that you're going to be out there.
The chances of getting a pilot, the chances of pilots being picked up.
Well, this is terrible because I can read it for free with Kindle Unlimited.
Do it.
But do you still get money for that?
Yeah.
You do?
I think, yeah. Do, yeah. Just give it a thing and tell me if you like it.
Because I pay for Kindle Unlimited.
Yeah,
so.
No.
But I'm happy to buy the book.
But Kindle Unlimited, you get paid by the pages of your stuff read. It used to be you get paid for every Kindle Unlimited, but then these authors saying, Fred Stoller's book is 74 pages, mine is 1,000. Why do I get the same thing? So now the authors, they divide it up by pages. If this makes any sense.
That doesn't make any sense.
The authors with big books were complaining that why does this schmuck who wrote this single get the same money for a Kindle Unlimited read?
That's ridiculous. That's like a throwback to like when Dickens used to get paid by the word or something.
Yeah.
Or like,
so basically,
you got to write a longer book next time.
But anyway,
it's like 10 minutes to go.
Well, someone said
bigger words,
bigger names, longer names.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah. Stretch it out. So
you guys need a union. That's a fucking outrage.
No, it's. I love doing it. You know, I never was one of these guys. You know, 97% of, and this is a fact, comics stand up, rather do stand up than anything else. Even I heard my friend is a regular on Silicon Valley, and TJ
Miller
wants to, I'm warning you now or telling you, he wants to just, when Silicon Valley over, move to New York and just do the Cellar and be one of these guys that does 5 sets a night. He loves it that much. So, I'm sorry to inform you guys, you'll be bumped by TJ Miller. But I never
it's
was
funny
that
how
guy.
That works.
Yeah, I'm not that guy.
DC is one of those guys.
Yes.
Loves stand-up comedy.
I'm not that guy either, Fred.
But I would think you
TJ
are.
TJ in here the other night with a slide whistle. Have you seen the slide whistle?
No,
thing?
I haven't seen it.
TJ Miller, you're
talking about. And he's fantastic on the slide whistle.
Oh.
But you know how the comedians are about...
Oh, it's ruthless. Ruthless.
So Ryan Hamilton followed him. You don't know Ryan Hamilton, but he's like, he's a Mormon. He's got the nicest...
Oh, actually, he was here the other time I did it, and Dan said, the two nicest guys, Fred Stoll and Ryan Hamilton. And I was talking a little bit. He goes, hey, friend, you're not as nice as I thought.
So Ryan was pissed about the slide whistle.
Was
and actually
it?
Expressed
really?
It on stage.
Really?
I can't imagine he was
that guy?
Ryan was hilarious. I've never seen him angry before, you know.
Hard to imagine that was real.
But to be fair to Ryan, he wasn't angry at the slide whistle. He was thrown off because comedians get, you know, it gets in their head.
Right. So he's following music.
Yeah, I'm following a slide whistle. All in his head.
He rubber chickenized it, is what you're saying.
Yes, exactly.
He categorized it as a rubber chickeny.
But it was great bit.
See, I did stand up so long ago that you could just. We were a little spoiled in the 80s. Now, there were people like, I remember your dad drove me and Richie Morris home, and I asked you, do you remember
Richard
this guy? So we could just go up and do our acts. Then I'd go on the road, and it was my low key depressive act with these weird one liners, and I didn't know. You had to acknowledge. You couldn't just do your act. You had to acknowledge. Here I am in, San Antonio, and you can't help but water down your act a little bit. Yeah. And I never loved being up there. I love getting the light. You know, I love when they say, "Fred, I have bad news. You can only do 20," and I'm like, you know. So you have to be a guy that I'm learning that. I think I was in a comfort zone during the comedy boom, and it was not really. I did it because you wanted to be a character actor and didn't know how you did it. And then I got turned on to stand-up Pips in Brooklyn. Do you guys know Pips?
I used to do Pips.
Yeah. And I saw Richard Lewis and Billy Crystal before they were very famous. This is, in 75. And someone explained to me, you know, Jimmy Walker, he did his act on The Tonight Show. No, you go to the improv, you do your act, then you get on The Tonight Show, then you get a sitcom. I said, that's how you become an actor. So even though I was pathologically shy, I never had an inkling to do stand-up or a dream. But I thought, I just have to get up on... I fantasized being on The Tonight Show going, this is only my second time doing stand-up. So I never really was like a performer. I talk about this. My self-esteem as a stand-up was so low. I remember I did the Virginia Beach. When I first started headlining... I felt sorry for the people lining up, like I was their weekend. They're in Foot Locker, you know, uniforms. You know, they got up from work. They're waiting an hour. It wasn't...
Consoling them in line. Yeah,
they would... You see, I would do all these New Jersey, Long Island, Connecticut, and I would just middle. Then John Mulrooney would go on, or Dennis Blair, or guitar people, and they much rather see them. So, yeah, so long-winded question. You got to... In stand-up, you know, my social anxiety has gotten worse. Like, you guys are very nice, but there's all the scenes. There's, like, the tough crowd testosterone scene. There's the kind of hipster, you know what I mean? So I always say stand-up, you can't dabble. You got to really be that. And I don't need for the ego... For the ego, hey, I saw you on Raymond, or I like your Kindle single. But see, when I moved to L.A., I wasn't even getting stage time at the Laugh Factory, and I'd call up. They'd go, nothing this week, Fred. So I wanted rejection for higher stakes. I don't need to do like a, you know what I mean?
But you scratched out a really good career for yourself.
Yeah. Oh, I'm not complaining, but I'm just saying why I kind of drift away from stand-up.
But now, so now you're concentrating on your writing? Or?
Yeah, well, I went through it, and he made a face. You're writing?
No, I just...
That's twitching.
That's just facial tics.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is that real?
Yeah, he does facial tics.
You're writing?
Yeah. I mean, they do happen at certain words, but yes.
Certain people set them off.
One time I was on
having
stage.
Lower back issues.
You just have something to do with anybody else's success.
One time I was on stage.
I'm having lower back issues too, which give me occasional wince about the face.
Okay. Anti-Semitic.
I was on stage and this guy was like, his eyes were crossed and he was just, I thought he was just a guy like, you know, this guy's a schmuck. And I was going, look at this guy. Like, what are you know, like,
But he was really
you have to say now, mentally challenged. I thought he was like rolling his eyes, crossing his eyes like this guy sucks.
You thought he was making the faces of
you. Yes. So, I like expressing myself. But, I did the book, and I have another thing, hopefully. So,
are you acting?
Yeah, I like acting if it comes effortlessly. But, you know, just to fit into other people's puzzles and vibe. I was opening for Norm Macdonald for close to a year. And, with stand-up, even with... Norm, and he does some theaters and clubs. It's still Mickey Mouse. It's still like, you're in the green room and all the locals are hanging out. Oh, I'm sorry, you are in physical
pain.
No,
I'm in physical. Yeah, my lower right back is having problems.
I think you really got to love stand up, and I
well, I never
fell
loved
into
it. 23 years running.
Yeah,
I'm like you. I'm like you. I thought that this was a way to.
I love moments of it.
I thought this was a way to get a sitcom.
Well, then I was in a comfort zone during the 90s when there was a lot of sitcoms.
Go ahead.
And I thought, oh, they're seeing me, or the runters, the network people, lead to a regular part. But that was a comfort zone. I was so happy to be off the road as a stand-up that I thought this. But it really wasn't fun. The guest stars, some of them were great, like Raymond and Seinfeld and. Voiceovers are a great gig. I did a lot of animation.
You did the Ray Romano. Didn't you do the what's?
Well, Raymond is a
no the cartoon that with the elephant.
No, that's Ray Romano.
Yeah, you weren't in that movie.
No, because Ray Romano was in it. Why would they?
Started it.
No, I wasn't in that. Penguins of Madagascar, the TV show. I did kids shows, a bunch.
It's good money in those voiceovers.
I thought you did Ice Age.
It was just effortless and. Yeah. But it's not creative, so I would stand up. I'm not like a Marc Maron that's going to sit on a stool and really go deep. You know, you got to get the crowd. So I like what I'm plugging now, just writing about my unique, weird point of view, the misfit guy.
And also, one of the keys is you don't have kids, so you keep expenses down.
Well, that's the thing, is that I'm lucky that I don't have a mortgage or kids, and I save money from the animation, and money for me buys not desperation. It doesn't buy, you know, big chandeliers or whatever. I don't, you know, trips, cars. But yes, so I started, and I got too old where I'm not going to pitch, you know, a show, you know, or stuff around my, you know, character. But I said, yeah, I just write what I'd like to, yeah.
So this is what I want to ask. So you guys are like, you know, slight in stature, Jewish guys, you know, neurotic, probably. And so the very act of being on stage in a certain way is just kind of stressful for you, right? Like, now DC's, I mean, by the way, you're half Jewish? No.
Yeah. The D part, you get it? Not the C part.
Technically all, but sort of, my mother wasn't, but she converted. So after
count.
She is.
That explains it, but doesn't count.
No, could I interrupt you?
Yeah.
The stressful part is being around other people. Like, I had such anxiety. I returned to stand-up because when my book came out, the Jewish Book Festival circuit sought me out and wanted me to do my act. So I had to remember my act. And it's just this Mickey Mouse stuff. Like, I asked for a drink at this club. We gave you your drink coupons and your ski bowl tickets. You know?
Hey.
Yes.
Hey, you convert.
But just, I had such anxiety when I was trying to remember my act. I got anxiety seeing photos on the walls of comedians I can't stand. Just their photos, let alone them. So it's more the being around them, social anxiety more than the stage.
This is my question. I somehow feel like if you're a tall, handsome DC Benny type,
my life would be better.
That even if you die on stage, it's like, you know, I'm still tall. Like, but when you're a nerdy, slight Jewish guy and you die, it's 10 times worse.
Death is death, my friend.
Because
death is death.
It's like affirmation of everything you're afraid of in life.
Well, I can't notice. I think Dan is lying.
It's an interesting theory.
Because his arms are big. And I said, are you working out? You're not slight. Look at those arms.
I haven't in a while.
Can DC answer my point? What's it like to be
dying is dying. You know, it's traumatic, you know. No matter if you're tall or you're white or black or whatever.
I mean, it's an interesting theory, but I think it's more to do with your childhood and how you perceive yourself, which,
your physical appearance is one thing, but there's the inside shit that, you know, we're all comics, so we're all broken toys.
Is Gary Goldman the best looking neurotic guy?
Yes.
Because
he's the biggest neurotic guy.
But I'm saying the best looking, you wouldn't expect to have that persona.
He's the best looking of the Jews.
But the best looking, like, I know a guy, an actor, you may know him, Steven Weber. No. He was on Wings. Great guy. You would know him if you saw him. And he's the best, as an actor, he's the best looking neurotic, meaning you're not supposed to be neurotic if you're that good looking.
Yeah, you're not, right?
Yeah, like what Gary Goldman, I'm saying, yeah.
Well.
Like if you're George Clooney, you go on stage, they laugh, you don't laugh, you walk off, you're still fucking George Clooney.
But the thing is, if you go on and you're George Clooney, let's say you're not a famous George Clooney, but you look like George Clooney,
the men in the audience immediately, most of them are going to dislike you. So you have to get them to like you. That's the challenge.
No. Actually, this is my theory.
That's the challenge.
I think the same thing with women. Like someone like Sarah Silverman is very hot, but she has an accessibility. She's not like, I think, let's say, what's her name? Aisha Tyler? The black lady who does, she seems not accessible, like a model kind of thing. So I think guys like the Amy Schumer because she's hot, but she seems like, you know.
Approachable.
Yes,
like
exactly.
You could get her.
So he's very good looking, but not like a George Clooney. So you're good, you know what I'm saying?
Well,
you have,
but at any rate, I feel like when I go in there, I've got to, you know, guys. I have to make guys like me. It's harder for me because I'm, in some ways, some kind of a threat. In some ways, they may think like their girlfriend or whoever's with them might be like, oh, who's this?
And sometimes this it's true. Admit it. And sometimes,
DC. I don't know about it. But all I'm saying is
he's literally blushing.
It's something that you may not think of. That it's not a plus. Being it helps to look funny and be funny. If you don't look funny, I feel like you got to work harder. You know?
I don't want to name, but there's some comedians. We name them? Me and my friends say he's the unfunniest fat guy or the unfunniest funny looking guy. Right. Like he had this, you know what I'm saying? Do you know any guys in your era who are very funny looking or fat and not funny?
Probably. Well, they have those great headshots, those hilarious headshots. Yes. And then you see them and you're like, oh.
Yeah,
that was the best headshot, though, with you, with the, you know, clown suit.
So I have two questions, two subjects that I know that if I were at home listening, I would want to hear Fred talk about, but then talk about whatever you want.
I have a question about the Cellar comics.
Okay, go ahead.
So much for my subjects.
I want to get to it, but I want to ask this. My impression of just Facebook and following guys like Judah Friedlander, who I met once, I really liked him, and I see his politics, and Greg Rudgell, and I wonder... I probably have the wrong conception that these are guys like Jim Norton, Colin Quinn, kind of blue collar, you're a pussy, don't be a liberal. So do they butt heads with the Greg Rudgell and him and who did I name?
Judah.
Is this kind of like the blue collar kind of?
I'll let DC handle that one.
why are you throwing it in my life? I don't see that those are teams. I don't see that those are teams. I don't think
but
that you're
Judah
talking about Quinn.
I give Judah and Greg Rogel props for being, you know.
You could put Greg Rogel up against anybody. I don't think he'd have to worry about, you know.
Judah is, I think, a free spirit and basically plays on every team. Nobody has a problem with Judah. You know, he's just,
okay, but I'm saying, is this, maybe I'm associated with the Jim Norton kind of vibe, this place.
Now, Norton is actually, Norton and Colin are really, really nice, actually.
No, I'm not saying nice, but I'm saying.
The ball break, you're talking about the ball break.
Yes. Political argument?
Yes.
Nah, I don't remember. Now Rogel, the funny thing, see, you threw a monkey wrench in the whole thing by mentioning Rogel because he does fight with people.
Yeah, he gets irascible. There's some vendettas with Rogel, which I enjoy.
But it could be with anybody.
Did
he
work out with weights? Because when he first came about,
he did.
I thought he looked like me. Now
a little bit.
Dan reminds me if I had an angrier brother, you know, who is more scrappy.
With
you know
arms.
What I mean? But Greg used to look
yeah,
his
no, Greg started beefing up like he went and did a little time or something, but he was doing push-ups, you know. He was
he
doing
came
push-ups,
out of prison.
You know, that the encyclopedia
yeah,
is,
he used to be
know.
Like me and, you know, like
but, yeah, he
like
well, he needed to, because
like
he's pissing, you know, he's getting these little
Broderick
scraps.
Kinda, yeah.
Brian, he wrote the Seinfeld episode with Banya in the suit.
Oh, I love you.
he sends me stuff from that all
but
the time.
Now, when you say you wrote, I just want to...
Fred Stoller, he wrote...
Now, how does it work in the writers? When somebody says they get credit for writing a script, does that mean you wrote it top to bottom, or you wrote it and then people added to
it?
Can
I preface this question? Because what I want to get to. You worked. It's like you were in the studio with the Beatles and contributed in some way. You found yourself at the most important sitcom ever.
I was telling the story. Who was I telling to? I'm so, like, fried. Great guy. He's not a comedian. James Autor. What's his name?
Al Toucher.
Yes.
Oh, we know him. He did our show.
Great guy. I remember they called me after I got let go of Seinfeld. Get to the table, Reed. There's a part for you. I didn't know what it was. And I'm driving there going, even if it's one line to be in Seinfeld. And there was a guy. What's his name who opens for Ray Romano? Manfilotti. And he was in a Seinfeld episode, and he got cut. But he came by for the footage because he goes, I want the footage. I was on Seinfeld. That's what it meant. So I was so to me, the fact I was sitting in Mel's Diner, in Monk's Diner, to be in it in any context, yes, was pretty, very...
Pretty historical.
Yeah. Like, I mean, it's an amazing thing. So what was the question you were asking about Seinfeld?
No, when you're credited as a writer, it says, written by Fred Stoller. What exactly does that mean? Does it mean you came up with the idea, but everybody... Yeah.
The way it works is, and you could you buy a Kindle Unlimited, my Seinfeld year, and then I get paid for every page you read.
Okay. So start reading. But,
just
flip through it. Basically, what happens is, it's like a lot of sitcoms, there's a table, and you sit around, and you come up with stories. Okay, you came up with that, you write this thing. Seinfeld, you're totally on your own. And you have to get a hold of Jerry and Larry, which are hard because they're either editing, casting, rewriting on the floor. And you have to pitch a Jerry, Elaine, Kramer, and Jerry, Kramer, Elaine, and George story. And you can't, so until you get all four storylines approved, then you got to connect them all. And then, and it was hard because I was.
And this is Larry David came up with this basic construct, right?
Yes,
that's his genius.
There's no team. There's no, you're all around the table. No one's helping each other out. And actually, I got lucky because the Jerry stories were hardest to get approved because he didn't have as many neuroses and flaws, you know. Yeah. So the Banya thing was good because it was more on annoying him. You know, wasn't Jerry, like I pitch ideas, Jerry wouldn't care about money, Jerry wouldn't do that.
That's your Larry David.
Yeah, my impression. So then I remember you have to then write out how you see them connected. So you have to try to grab Larry into your room and show the chalkboard. And he goes, no, have Banya come over here. And he was yelling at me, you're not writing it down. Where's your fucking pencil? You know. But I understand it's like when a waiter is not writing it down. So then once you have it, you know, okay, then Banya calls up, says, I want the meal. You have ABC, you know, all the scenes.
So what were the subplots of that episode? Remind me.
The Kramer story was based on this guy knew that. It wasn't a big story. And I remember Michael Richards was mad at me. That where he gets rid of the refrigerator. The Elaine story was based on a true story. I did the show London Underground, 1990. Probably no one remembers it, where they flew comedians to London. I met a woman. It was very exotic, sex, things, you know, I liked. And then I
did the DC Benny.
Yeah. And then
this guy's 007-ing me. I don't know.
Sorry. Then He's married.
I flew her out to L.A. with an open and a ticketed, you know, thinking... You know, no limit. And then, like, she was all mad. You flew me out here just for sex. And she'd get mad. She'd wince, like I thought you did, if I said what instead of pardon. So that became the Elaine story. This guy, he's a bounder. I guess they weren't as big, prominent. And then the George story I wrote totally got changed. Answering your question. So when you write up the whole script. Then you hand it in. They say, we're going to do it. Come up with ideas for another one. Jerry and Larry shut the door, and they kind of, some things they keep. They threw out my George story, came up with a George story that I didn't come up with, and they changed names. Like, I called Kenny Banya Rory Feldman. They like, you know, Kenny.
They want to un-Jewify it?
Probably that, or sometimes they, when I did my part, Julie Dreyfus said, they would like to give shout-outs to, like, friends. DC Benny, can we call this guy this? And Larry goes, no, I have a friend called this. So a lot of times it was like a tribute, called someone. Uh-huh. Kenny Banya was probably a friend. Oh, yeah, so they would kind of change a lot or keep a fair amount. So this is a skeleton of your stuff. Some got totally, you know, a fair amount, because Bruce Smirnoff was such a weird guy that he kept going, indeed. I'm huge, you know, Jerry, you know, he really said that. So, yeah, so that was the process.
By the way, Ray, Ellen just said, Ray, do you have anything in particular you want to discuss? Or you just,
Sit down, pull up a chair, Ray.
I just wanted to hear that story.
I thought maybe Ray Ellen had a particular issue.
So you're a big Seinfeld fan?
Oh, huge.
So I just told the chronology, the Kenny Banya is based on a real guy called Bruce Smirnoff, who...
Wait, don't tell him the whole story again.
I won't retell it, but I'll tell you the capper. So we got the free meal, you know... He finally got his meal for the Armani, And then the real guy said, you know, and finally I took him to Jerry's after two suit meals. And he goes, you know, you made money. Not only the suit, I gave you a scarf, you know. I forgot he said he gave me something else. He goes, I want a real good meal like at, I forgot, Dan Tanner's or these places. And I, again, I'm not good at, you know, going, fuck you, you know, and, you know, you're an idiot. So I said, all right, let me get this guy off my hair, you know. So he took me out, and I had gotten fired from Seinfeld, and he thought I was rich, so he went to town like it was on, you know, Paramount.
That's what, well, I take Dan out, it does that.
No, he doesn't. he was like every appetizer, you know, so... So, yeah, you missed the story, but Kenny Banya is based on a real guy.
Bruce Smirnoff, wow.
What happened when
you know
the guy...
Do you know Bruce Smirnoff?
Oh, we all know Bruce, yes.
Yes.
Hold on. What happened when he saw the Seinfeld episode?
Oh, no, I brought him into audition. I thought... And then he goes, I wasn't good enough playing me. I couldn't get a part playing myself. I couldn't even do that. They hired an Irish guy with muscles to be me. I tried to get him to get the part.
Could he see himself in the script now and realize that he'd been a jackass? Or did it go over his head?
You know, it's sort of like the guy in my new book who... You know, I have another book. What's your name again?
Ray.
I have a new book, and I was interviewing people, and one guy demanded a meal in Malibu at this expensive sushi place. I go, you know, you're being like Kenny Banya. He goes, you benefited. Why shouldn't I? So he didn't. He still had the rationale of Kenny Banya, like, you got an Armani suit. So he kept saying, it's a $1,000 suit. That's my Bruce Smirnoff. Then I found out, do you know a guy named Peter Fogel?
Yeah, I know.
Him and Smirnoff used to go to these closeout racks, and it was just $200. It wasn't even $1,000.
I got to tell you something about the last time I saw Bruce Smirnoff was to do a cruise ship, showcase. And he's like, do you want to come down to Florida and do this cruise ship show? I was like, ugh. So I get there, and this is so funny that you say all this stuff about him, because he takes one look at me. The first thing he says, he's like, you didn't wear a blazer?
You obviously know Alan Havey, right?
Yeah, of course.
So I guess Smirnoff is booking retirement communities where my mother lives in Florida.
Boca Vista.
Yeah, and she's in Coconut Creek. And he says to Havey, you know, and Havey's saying, maybe it's a good circuit, you know. But you have to fly yourself to Florida and audition. And Havey goes, you know, I'm not that. Maybe one day I'll be that bad where I need to do that. But that's Smirnoff was booking cruises. And
it was the same thing. You got to fly yourself. I'm like, oh, God. You know, it's like me and a juggler and a fucking,
I can
you
get
know.
You booked in Aruba right here, right now.
Yeah. But no, right. So Smirnoff never saw
it's
that.
True.
He still thinks that.
He does Aruba.
Yeah.
I have a club in Aruba, yeah.
He is the king of comedy.
Yeah, Aruba Ray, if you haven't.
They call him Aruba Ray.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Anyway.
I never went to anywhere exotic. I thought I was going.
Go there.
Because I went to, I thought, a hedonistic resort to host a strip poker tournament in Jamaica. And it was me and Cato Kalin was awful. And it was, they weren't even naked. Well, no, it was women that were prostitutes hoping to get into acting, and there was the nude side and the prude side, and I couldn't go on the nude side because I'd have to take my clothes off.
Was there a brunch?
Why'd you get fired
from Seinfeld?
Yeah.
It's not like get out. You know, pack your bags. I like when people, it sounds like a bit, when they go, I fired my accountant. You know, that sounds like a bit.
It does.
You know, or I fired my lawyer. You don't go, get out. You just don't use your shrink anymore. But
I see. You just stopped getting
I didn't work. I was an S back.
You were an S back.
And I knew that was going to happen.
You said you had another book.
Well, the one we're talking about now.
Oh, you don't have, I thought there was a... So wait. Is there another book that after 5 minutes to kill, do you have anything else in the hopper?
I do. Well, if it does well enough, if enough people read it on Kindle Unlimited and get a page count, I have another thing in the hopper. Yeah, this is my passion. I like writing this quirky stuff. You know, it's funny. A lot of people talk about this. I don't know if you've had it where, you know, like you're at a film festival, if you have a thing you did, and they always go, what's next? Like you feel like a schmuck. The thing I'm promoting, I'm doing this. Like,
yeah.
Like
well, you know, we years just have, working on.
Well, we had to fill another 8 minutes, so I have to say what's next. Either that.
No, I'm not saying that.
Ask about your personal life.
No, this guy. No, I always Norm Macdonald was saying this guy. I love him because he's not like the kind of, you know, Jim Norton aggressive Nick DiPaolo.
But he's Jim Norton.
You've been traumatized, man.
But he's not.
I hope he comes in here.
He's not the hipster kind of.
You're talking about me.
Yeah. I quoted him and he said he didn't say it, so I'm not going to say
I didn't say it. I said I don't remember saying it.
He said that it's either the jocks or the cool guys or the.
Well, there are different
cafeteria tables.
There are different genres of comic.
Yeah,
they like the Jersey guys. There's the hipster Brooklyn. There's the, you know, the tough
more
guys.
More cerebral.
We were saying.
Yeah, the UCB. But that's what the seller is, I guess.
So I what you're saying is I don't fit into one of those.
But
categories.
I love it because you're not trying. You're not trying. You know, like I always like Norm Macdonald, Gilbert Gottfried, because they're not trying to be cool. When I started comedy, there was no thought I want to do it because it's cool. You know what I mean? Now it's like people that want to be cool. You know what I mean?
There's a lot of...
Were you always funny? I know such a cliche question
as a comedian.
But
I was
in your case.
Pathologically shy, pathologically depressed. I just knew
Were you funny in your thoughts? You knew you were funny?
No. It was...
That's interesting.
What happened was that's why I never had the passion to, you know, do Carnegie Hall and have specials.
You know, there was in that Keith Richards book. Did you read that Keith Richards
book?
Yes,
I did. Well, no, I'm lying. I listened to the tape. Does it count as reading if you listen
yes,
to the audio?
Does, yes,
yeah, I listen to the audio.
Now it does.
So the thing that I took away from that book was that he never even considered he could write songs. They said, listen, you got to write some songs. And turns out, he's one of the greatest songwriters ever. So you'd think that people who have these great talents, like it's bursting out of them.
Yeah. Maybe they don't have great
talents. Sometimes you stumble onto
but,
it.
So here, he didn't know he was even funny.
Well, no. But you see, what happened was, I knew the real world wasn't for me. I lived in the Sheepshead Bay. And
by Pips.
Yes. Right. And that's how I got turned on and to comedy. But I never made anyone laugh. I was paralyzed with anxiety. What am I going to do? I knew I'm not going to be an accountant or anything, you know.
Were you good to school?
No. I was just, I don't think because I was stupid, but I just had.
But you finished high school, but you never went to college.
I went 2 years to Kingsborough Community College, which, you know, continuation of high school. But I just went to keep my mother off my back. But I thought to be an actor, your parents have to start you out as a kid on the Brady Bunch. I didn't know how you did it. But stand-up was the way. But even though I wasn't funny. So then I would, like, listen to, you know, Richard Pryor, Jimmy Walker. And so when I started, I tried when I was 17, and I would do jokes about living in a bad neighborhood, which I really didn't. I would just copy what I thought. I thought, you know, you had to tell stories, like, about the cops arresting everyone. It was so god-awful. And I'd see David Brenner, and I had a chain. I just, you know, I had a chain and a shirt. I thought that's what you're supposed to do. So then I quit for 3 years. So then I said that's the only place I got feedback. So I went back and I just had my head down and couldn't look at the audience and do weird non sequitur jokes. And my persona was accidental because I couldn't look at the audience. And so it came. But no one ever said you're a funny guy. No,
I think we all when we started, we all started by sort of copying what we saw, thinking, oh, this is how you do it. Right. For a brief period of time, I had a catchphrase because I thought
was there footage of that?
I never learned. That was my catchphrase.
Bad.
I feel
like
a bad catchphrase.
What? That's not
that
long ago, right?
No, it was a long time ago, like in the 90s. Because Louis Schaefer used to say to me, "Dan, you write a mean joke, but nobody remembers who you are." Like
that's
Louis
right.
Schaefer,
I caught
I'm
the tail end
guy.
Of that. I caught the tail end of "You Never Learn." I think
I only did it a few times.
I feel like I remember
like,
it's
too constricting to fucking find "I never learn" angle for every joke. You know.
But no, I don't think I'm funny like quick, like a wise guy. You know, like those guys that can sit at a table and
like Norton. Right.
Yeah. Or
we keep going back to that. That's,
yeah.
That's
no.
But Norton actually is.
Yeah.
Gifted at that.
He's great at that.
No, exactly. I'm not gonna guy that's gonna punch up with Howard Stern and you know do all that stuff like a wit. No, I'm just. I think I'm like my mother's unintentionally funny because she's just doesn't know how to say words and. You know,
she born in this country.
Yeah, so you like, know what I mean.
Well, she's an older woman. That's,
yes,
how old
I have
your
somebody
mind?
In my 88 family.
88 or 89. Yeah. You know, she goes, "Oh, it's mind-boggling," and you know, just...
Well, that's just age.
Dan, we have to wrap it up. But speaking of jumping the shark, Juanita, my wife, wants to be on the show more often. You think
really? I think it's a good idea.
I think that's a fine idea. Yeah.
I think it's a very good idea.
I bet more often doesn't mean every week, but more often, yeah, as a recurring character.
I have like an outspoken, like slightly Rosie Perez-ish Puerto Rican wife.
Wow.
And she has trouble saying words.
I'm sorry I interrupted you. Was there a theme you wanted to ask before you, that I interrupted? I feel
no,
so guilty.
No, my pleasure. Interrupt me all you want. I don't remember.
See, my vision for the podcast is to have a lot of recurring characters that we revisit. So
I think that's
that,
a good idea.
Juanita would fit right in with that.
Organically,
with that
I think.
Kind of thing.
But you're going to have to control her.
Well, I can't control. If you can't control,
I can't control.
Certainly
can.
Nobody
I'm like,
controls.
I'm like Fredo in The Godfather 2. Yeah. I can't control.
Well, if you're
her.
Giving me free reign to control her, then I will control her as I deem fit.
She likes a strong man.
Dan. I hope you still think I'm nice. Not as nice as the Mormon guy, but
well, the Mormon guy, that AKA Ryan Hamilton, he's a different kind of. You're nice. There's something about Ryan. It's almost a magical. Fairy quality.
Norman Rockwell kind of.
He's not like a. He's,
unless you have a slide whistle, then boom.
Well, that's his slowly.
He's like the guy. Gangsta on that slide
Hitler
whistle,
youth,
really.
You know?
Is he like the guy in 30 Rock? He strikes me as. Who was the guy in 30 Rock? Jack Breyer, that kind of persona? Like, hey.
No. Okay. You immediately, when you meet Brian, you're immediately transported to a simpler time.
Yeah. Cherry loafers.
Ryan is his niceness is far rarer than like being a great comedic talent.
What was it Henry Aldrich? Was that
in other words
those old movies in the 40s?
Oh yeah. It's very wonderful life-ish.
Yeah.
But the good part, not the suicidal part.
No, I want to say about The Cellar how illustrious it is. That I'm staying with a friend, Rena, and I'll like name someone, go, is this person good? Because I never met Adrian. I met her. I did Art and Lance.
Adrian Iacolucci.
And I said, is she good? Because, I never met her. He goes, oh, she's good. She gets weekends at The Cellar. And then I bumped into another woman. I go, is she good? Oh, she gets weekends at The Cellar.
It's the
she's
measuring
really good.
Stick.
So, yeah.
No, I mean, your estimation, does everybody get weekends at The Cellar? Top notch, or there's some clunkers that get weekends at the Cellar.
No, the truth is,
I get an occasional weekend at
the Cellar. No, the truth is, there is no difference between the weekends and the weeknights anymore in terms of
why is it
the competition for the spots or the what it says about the person's stature.
But
a lot of comedians.
It used to be that getting a weekend was more prestigious.
No, it happens a lot. Right,
I see.
Because there were no audiences during the week. But now we're.
But Adrian and Jennifer Kurtzen was the other one.
Yeah.
Who I said I she looked familiar. She does The Cellar.
Now if you do a weekend brunch spot, you're in.
So what happens is that some comedians are on the road all the time, and some are not. So the ones who are on the road all the time, we try to give them as many spots during the days that they're not on the road, and then people are here. So that's but there's no weekends, weekdays doesn't matter. Anybody who's doing a spot at The Cellar, it means the same thing.
That's
even brunch.
Even brunch.
Brunch has scared the shit out of me now. I never occurred to me that I was gambling with the franchise.
I never thought of it either, but this individual mentioned to me that. Was it Ray Allen? No, it wasn't Ray Allen.
Who was it? Did just say who it was?
It was Kyle Dunnigan. But the thing is.
Kyle Dunnigan, and I respect him.
Well, he should be respected.
I got to text him. Go ahead.
But the thing is, there is that fine line between a place that nobody can get in and a place that's too accessible.
It's not too accessible.
And a place that's
like
the more
shows you do, the less difficult it is to get in.
How about having not as good comics on the brunch?
No, that I won't do.
Okay. No.
I don't know if
this really affected you. This brunch thing. You were pretty solid about it, and now you're a little shaky on it.
This is my life,
It's not going to kill the place.
It's going to be a good idea. Nothing's going to hurt. The brunch is not going to hurt.
But not
going to
kill the place.
Somebody of Kyle Dunnigan's stature is smirking at me behind my back.
Well, he's not smirking at you behind your back, but he just wonders.
And I know what he's saying. Look at the Jew trying to make as much money as he can, squeeze the sponge till every last drop of moisture.
No, you know what it's like? Sometimes, like, if someone does a stupid, bad movie, you go...
Like well, you go,
all right, once in a while, it doesn't mean Samuel Jackson is not what he is.
Yeah.
You just go, all right, once
it
in a while.
It doesn't work. It's not going to kill the place.
In my own defense, let me just tell you, there's no gold in them Dar Hills. It's a big undertaking to do a brunch, and it's not a high carbon charge. I just thought it would be really fun to have a brunch I thought a lot of...
I have an idea. The brunch starring Carl Dunnigan.
Oh, yeah. He's going to be... And I thought that comedians might start coming down to the Olive Tree at that hour or two to have brunch now that we have a real brunch and to have a DJ. And it just might be a nice thing.
It's not going to hurt anything.
I think you'll have so many comedians coming for a free brunch.
Yeah, I just think it's going to be a nice thing.
On a related note...
People will enjoy it.
On a related note...
They wouldn't enjoy it. I'm not doing it for the money.
On a related note, with regard to the Comedy Cellar brand... Anything new with the Las Vegas?
Now that's for the money.
Okay.
No, that's just taking a long time to negotiate that deal. I talk about it on the radio all the time, and I just did an interview with Entrepreneur Magazine, and I spoke about it. I think I'm going to fuck it up by saying the wrong thing, and they're going to hear it.
Fred, there may be a Comedy Cellar Vegas room coming soon.
Well, if there's a podcast, I'm there.
Okay. And there'll be brunch there too.
And also, but now Vegas is near your home of
as long
Los
as
Angeles.
Hummus.
So. If you wanted to come to Vegas and do a week, that might be an option. But again, you're not a big comedy person anymore.
I did once the Riviera. It was 7 nights, 3 shows a night. And, you know, in Vegas, it was...
Well, this wouldn't be quite that intense. I think it would be two shows a
night. With the Cellar name, you know, I mean, I have friends that they want to run up the steps where Louis does, and it's just so iconic. You're like monks.
You know Ben Bailey, Fred Stoller?
I know the name. I've seen you.
It's Cash Cab, Seinfeld.
Oh, wait a minute.
Big Ben Bailey
now. My friend Reno, we're watching you, yeah.
You have
a friend
named Reno? That's cool.
Reno.
We're out of time, but Ben, you got something.
Oh, really? I showed up just
as soon as you show up.
All right, there's Bailey's here, wrap it up.
Oh, yeah, of course now. Yeah, there was someone...
I remember some of your bits, man.
Thank you.
He had the bit
where... Are you a Seinfeld guy?
So, anyway, is that you?
Yes,
he had the bit where...
Are you a Seinfeld guy?
What do you mean? Do I like it?
Like, you know all the episodes?
I know a lot of them.
He wrote the Kenny Banyu with the suit, and it's not a meal. You have to give me a meal. A meal.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I know that episode.
That would be a good trivia on Cash Cab.
That's a fantastic episode.
Yes, one of the best.
That'd be a good trivia on Cash Cab.
They list episodes sometimes, don't they? Like, they rank them. There's been lists
I'll take you all down with me.
Yeah.
I know I'm crazy.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's
the other day I ate a tuna fish sandwich, and I jumped right in the pool.
Yes. That was a joke. I have a book about the Young Comedian special I was on, and I did that joke.
Yeah, that's where I know that from.
He had the joke about how, you know.
Nice to meet you.
Very good, Ben.
He had the joke about it had the tag on the pillow. You're not supposed to remove
actually,
it.
That was his joke.
No.
I'll remove it.
Actually, I never did that joke. But people assume it's an obvious thrill. I would do things like I drank milk that expired yesterday. I was on an escalator. I let go of the handrail. I mailed a letter. I put the stamp not all the way in the corner. No, I didn't jiggle the mailbox.
You never did the joke about taking the tag off a pillow.
No, but it seems so obvious. Yeah, but I never did it.
I don't know, man. I heard it somewhere.
Wow.
Great bits, though. I remember
Thank
that Young
you
Comedian
so
special,
much.
Man.
Well,
those were great. Those were where so many comics were first seen
that's
back
what
then.
I was trying
they were such a huge thing.
Tell them,
We need a new Rodney to be doing that.
Well, the one
but
I said
not for young guys, for old guys like us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you want to take 5 minutes to talk about the comedy boom in the 80s, why it petered out, and the comedy boom now, and why it's different. You have any thoughts about it?
I feel like the comedy boom in the 80s, like I came in after that, but I feel like I remember everyone was like, oh, it'll never be that good again. You know, it was the best it'll ever be. And I feel like what happened then is it became so popular so quickly that there weren't enough comedians to fill all the slots of places that everybody had a comedy show all of a sudden. This is just from what I've heard. And then there weren't enough comics. So then all of a sudden there was like all these people who weren't really comics were getting gigs to fill the spots because it was a great way to sell seats or whatever. So it kind of got...
It was shitty.
It got a bad reputation. People didn't think it was so great, you know, and it sort of petered out after that.
And then
that.
You could see it on TV all the time, too.
There's a flaw in that part of it because that's what people used to say, but you can see it now 1,000 times more than you were ever able to see it back then when it was on TV all the time.
Well, I think people are looking at TVs and phones so much. You know, it's like it's a little break to see something live. You know, you're just always looking at a phone. You're always looking at TV.
But also,
to see
I was saying,
live.
Ben, earlier that comedy became cool. Like MTV Half Hour Comedy Hour, it became like stylistic in a way. But now it's getting back away. Like, that's why I love Dan. I'm not saying because you're not cool, but I'm saying just these great jokes. Yeah. And it became more attitude than jokes.
My theory is that we're in a golden age, that we're in a golden age of comedy quality, kind of like we were in a golden age in the 60s with the Beatles and the Stones and the Beach Boys and Motown and all that at that time. It's not inevitable historically. Like, if the Beatles hadn't come along, then it wouldn't have been the boom in the 60s that there was. And I think right now you have... comedians with depth, philosophers, Louis,
one of the reasons for
just
that.
Go ahead, Dan.
He's right at the culmination of my big point. Adam is like, I got a sore back. He has no idea.
But you cut off many questions that I've started to ask on this very broadcast.
I'm going to go ahead and back right out. I didn't know what I was getting involved in.
Go back and listen to the tape, and you'll find that you cut off numerous questions that I was asking.
But not answers. Go ahead.
All right. So, but still.
Go ahead, Dan.
Still. One of the reasons that there's a lot more seasoned comics now is that we're all a lot more experienced. When I started doing comedy here in the 90s at the Cellar, there were no 40-somethings and 50-somethings. They weren't here. Right. They were all either in L.A. or I don't know where the fuck they
were. Dead. Some of them were dead, I think.
They were gone.
But
they were out on the road.
But
they were out on the road making money.
We have been honing our craft.
Holiday.
But who the fuck, even Seinfeld, when he made it huge. In 1990-91, when he had his sitcom and stopped doing comedy full-time, he was like 15 years in. We're 20, 25 years in, still doing it. So
still doing it.
We have no choice.
You're making a similar point. There's more better comics.
But the reason is, maybe numerous reasons, we have no choice. I got no choice but to get funnier. I don't have a sitcom.
He didn't have a way out.
That's where he was going with this. But my only point is that that's a valid point. Yes,
that
it is
a valid point.
When there's a boom in anything, people shallowly look for every reason other than maybe the boom is based on some actual substance. Maybe the comedy is really, really good
right now. What was the gimmick?
That's right.
It's just because there's so many great comedians.
It's because of the new technology, or it's because of this, or it's because of the explosion. No, maybe it's because there's never been, going back to a Beatles and the Stones and the Beach Boys and Motown
all at one time. Yeah.
So, of course, there's a fucking boom. You know?
Which one am I? Which one do you think of me as? Don't answer that. You're like
but
a Bon Jovi.
We can.
Right? You'll take it.
I probably would have.
There's a lot more ways to get our content out there. You know, we can get our content out there. There's a lot more ways to do that now. We couldn't do that before. You had an HBO special.
It's true.
That was it.
Fred Stoll.
You know, but now you can get shit out there. So it begets.
Fred Stoller, are you in accord with Noam that comedy is simply better now than it's been in the past?
Well, you had a good point. Look at these guys like Louis, Mark Maron, Bill Burr. Comics seem to be hitting their stride in their mid or later 40s.
And this wasn't the case in the 80s, as I recall. There's a lot more philosopher comics. People doing social commentary, and people are hungry for it in a way where all the acts of the 80s and 90s, they were just doing bits, really. But people like Louis and Chris and Burr, they're really talking about life in a way that people are hungry for.
Social commentary.
Yeah, so I think...
That's not what Carlin always did.
But
yeah, Carlin was alone at the time doing that, really.
Right, and he did both. He was, like, observational as well.
Yeah.
It's an interesting combination. Yeah. There's not really too many that do both at this point.
The pain in my back says we're out of time.
I will tell you, the comedian today, the living comedian today who reminds me most of Carlin is Gary Goldman.
Wow. That's disappointing for everyone.
Except for Gary.
That's great for Gary.
Well, you know what?
Bad for Carlin?
No, bad for Carlin. You know what?
When he does that state abbreviations thing, and he can go on for... Have you seen that?
That thing's incredible. That joke is incredible.
I
watched it the other night.
But you have some of that, like the Windbreaker...
Bailey does it.
I know you don't do it anymore, but that Windbreaker thing is in the same genre. Like, who would have thought to even... There's a joke there, let alone...
The owl. He's got 20 minutes on a fucking owl, man.
Has it been on TV yet?
Yeah.
Oh my God!
Yeah,
I love the
album. Well, yeah, it was on my last special. Thanks, Ben.
It's great.
But yeah, there's guys now
we can cut it in here. Go ahead.
Yeah. You kind of have to be one or the other. It seems at this point.
If you want to be identifiable as one or the other.
You know what I mean?
Well, I don't know. I try very often to get Dan to break out of his thing. Say, Dan, talk about some stuff that interests you. You know, because Dan's a deep thinker. I said, talk about it on stage a little bit. Maybe try to find some longer. He does it great. Set up punchline.
You're not wrong, but what I'm doing is more unique than I think what you're suggesting. It may or may not be the road to riches, but I think what I'm doing is a unique thing.
It's what you creatively do, it's not like you chose it. It just sort of
it's
is
also
what
how
you
I make.
Make
money and. You know, so I don't want to
fuck with
it.
Was it a choice that you made, or are you just creating what comes to you naturally?
You don't want
to
talk about Trotsky?
Fred was saying how his character just evolved naturally. I think that's the case with me. I used to do different things. I did some impressions back in the day. The terrible impression.
Oh, God, I wish I remember
those. Just the worst you've ever seen. And the catchphrase.
You did people in your family, knowing that anyone knew?
Who did I... Impressions?
This is my dad.
He does great impressions.
Getting the pay.
I do...
Yeah. He does Chris Rock.
Meza.
Oh my God, I want to hear that.
No, Meza impressions. Not very good at all. But
you, Ahmed? You do Ahmed Ahmed?
I don't do. You do I do Meza Med.
He does his act in French, right?
Yes, I certainly have. But
that's amazing.
What am I trying to say?
That right there is enough. You do your act in French one time. You don't need to be philosophical.
I want to hear you do a bit in French, but as
Dan
Chris Rock.
Dan does seem like a throwback to the 80s.
Chris Rock doing one of your bits of French.
Well, I was doing it the other day on the podcast. Il y a des noirs et il y a des nègres. Et il faut que les nègres s'en aillent. In any,
do the black the female black poet, what's her name?
Maya Angelou.
What's her
name? Does my sassiness upset you?
That's not that good. It's funny though.
Yeah.
Do Chris Rock?
I love that you think there's one black female poet.
Does Keith Robinson have something to?
he does a tell. Do a tell.
Everyone does a tell.
Well, everyone does a tell. Keith Robinson is not like my Maya Angelou.
Oh, I didn't know Keith was there.
Keith was sitting right there.
Oh, no.
There's more than one black female poet in the world.
Right.
All right, we got to wrap it up.
This was a fine episode, in my opinion. I think comedy fans will adore this episode. I think non-comedy fans will find it interesting as well.
Fred, DC, thank you.